other people in Afghanistan firing. And I'm like, he's free in Morocco.
That's Abdullah Tabarak. Mm-hmm. Okay. And a number of countries have sought release. Welcome to Enough Rope. My apologies to viewers expecting to see Mike Willis here. As advertised, he will be next week. Instead, tonight's guest, who's only in the country for a brief visit. After the outbreak of the war on terror in 2001, enemy combatants captured in Afghanistan by American forces were sent to Guantanamo Bay. Dubbed the worst of the worst, among them was an Australian, David Hicks. Tonight we're going to speak to the man charged with his defence. Will you please welcome Major Michael Morey. Welcome to the show. Can we clear something up from the start? Your actual name is Dante?
Dante, yeah.
Dante.
Yeah.
Wow, which is kind of appropriate considering what you've been going through in the legal system.
Yeah, I think it was like the 10th circle.
Okay. Welcome to the 11th.
Thank you.
Can I call you Dan or
yeah,
do you prefer Michael?
No, Dan's fine.
Okay, I'll call you Dan. I want to get something else out of the way because before this job as defense counsel, you were the chief prosecutor at the military base in Hawaii, the U.S. military base. Have you ever had course in the line of your work to use the phrase, you want the truth, you can't handle the truth?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
It's not like that
it's
movie
not
at all.
Like that. It's not like that.
When you were working at Hawaii and you got offered asked to be a defense counsel on the military commissions, that was 2003. Did you see it then as an interesting career opportunity?
I thought it would be something new to be involved with, obviously. I thought I was going to be involved with something that operated very much like a court-martial. They were going to use military prosecutors, military defense lawyers, have military judges. And I've been doing pretty much what I had been doing, except we were going to be trying law of war violations. And so I saw it as a new challenge.
But you really hadn't had a lot of experience in international law at that time, had you?
No. And again, my sort of stepping into it was I thought I was going to be involved in a court-martial, plenty of criminal experience dealing with court-martials, and that's how the laws would be using. Unfortunately, what I found out was that we were in something totally different, something completely made up and resurrected from 1942.
Which is military commissions. Did you know anything about those?
Nothing. And, I had no specialized training in the law of war. I had no specialized training in international law. And so once I got there, I realized I really wasn't trained to be involved in this process.
The military commissions in 1942 you're referring to were set up in response to Germans who'd come to America to commit acts of sabotage and needed to be tried, and they were set up specifically for those.
Right.
The military commission process you've been through here with David Hicks, you've since come to describe them as show trials set up for political purposes, mm-hmm. not legal ends. What's brought you to that conclusion?
Well, what you found out was the people that created the system are the same people that were responsible for fighting the war in Afghanistan, setting up and choosing Guantanamo as the detention center, approving the interrogation techniques, and being in charge of the interrogations that were going on. And so what you had is a system of sort of like the investigators and the jailers also being in charge of the supposed trial system, and there was no independent check and balance on it. And unfortunately, they needed to set up a system that would justify what they had already done.
What is the key difference between a military commission and a court-martial, the system you were expecting?
I think it's the independence of a judge, a judiciary that is in control. Once someone is charged, the independent judge takes control, and that goes from both the trial level and through the appeal process. And in the commission system, it was set up, they created this person sort of an appointing authority, and I think in Australia, maybe more like a DPP. And yet that individual, if I made a motion to dismiss a charge, it would go not to the presiding officer to rule on it, but it would have to go to the appointing authority. So it'd be like letting the DPP rule on defense motions here in Australia. And just that's not a fair system that anybody can support.
What are the charges actually laid against David Hicks?
Right now he's not charged at all. Obviously, mm-hmm. the system was thrown out.
Sure.
The charges that they had come up with before was a charge of conspiracy, an attempted murder by an unprivileged belligerent that they made up in aiding the enemy.
An unprivileged belligerent, meaning what?
I don't know what they meant. They made it up.
So you're his defense counsel.
Yes.
You can't even define what the term unprivileged belligerent means. How do you defend that?
Well, their view was everybody on the Taliban side. Mm-hmm. Right? Anybody on the Taliban side was a war criminal because they resisted the invasion of their country. And I didn't quite understand that. And then it was, as you heard the administration, their position was, well, they didn't wear proper uniforms. And so I started thinking about that. I said, well, what about the Northern Alliance? What about the CIA that were fighting in Afghanistan? They weren't wearing proper uniforms, so it really can't be a crime, and it's not a crime. But they had to try to fabricate something.
Can you confirm for me, David Hicks, in an interview with the Australian Federal Police back in somewhere around 2001-2002, allegedly admitted to the following, that he had trained with Al-Qaeda and Laskhar-e-Taiba, correct?
He's charged with that.
Charged with that?
Yeah.
Can you confirm
well,
that?
Well, that's it. All right, just so your audience knows, there are certain things I've been given that's under a protective order that I'm not allowed to say. To disclose.
You can't confirm
it. I can't confirm it. I don't want to seem like being like a lawyer, but I mean, obviously...
You've never seemed like that to us.
I did go to law school someday.
Yes.
Obviously, he wasn't charged with any crime being at Laskhar-e-Taiba. Right. I think everybody knows that Laskhar-e-Taiba was controlled by the Pakistani Intelligence Service and the Pakistani Army, and he wasn't charged with any crime, actually, during that time period. They're alleging his crimes occurred in Afghanistan in the charge sheet, and that he attended the militant camps that were in Afghanistan, and he's charged with guarding a Taliban tank and going towards the front.
Can you confirm whether or not he met Osama bin Laden, or that's something you can't discuss?
I can't. So again, it's in the charges that he had met him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you accept that the U.S. government has the right to try David Hicks?
I accept that they have the right to try anybody that violated the law of war in a fair system. And that's really what I've been asking for David Hicks since I got involved. Give us a court-martial. We could have gone to trial a long time ago. But that would have provided him actual rights, and they wouldn't have been able to predict and control the outcome.
When did you first meet David?
December of 2003.
And what was your first impression of him?
He just struck me as an Aussie. You know, he's got that heavy accent, and, he was, at that point in time, he was really focused on basic needs. The food he was getting was not adequate. He was being held in isolation. He wasn't being given access to sunlight. And so you could see that he was a person that was really focusing on his just basic needs.
You said, I've read, that you felt some similarity between you and David. What
well,
was that?
obviously, David never finished the ninth grade, but he had two kids, and he worked hard. His relationship broke up there, and he started wandering, wanted to do something more with his life. And I guess I didn't do too well in my first go at college, and my drastic change in my life was to enlist in the Marine Corps. He found a different adventure.
Well, it was quite an adventure. I'll get to that a bit later. We have a picture here of a solitary confinement cell at Guantanamo, which is where David spent a fair bit of his time. Can you give me some idea of the conditions he lives in and what a day is like for him?
You pretty much see the cell right there. It's just a cement room. He's in his cell until they wake him up to give him his morning meal. He gets his noon meal and his dinner meal. Sometime during the day, maybe during daylight hours, he'll be offered an opportunity for an hour to go out to a large, chain link fence pen to have an hour of exercise. Besides that, he sits in his cell. When I last saw him, he was allowed to have three books. And once a week, they came around with a cart and gave him one book a week.
What sort of books? Because I know you tried to arrange books for him.
We've been bringing in books. There's a lot of things we try to do, obviously, to get David to focus on away from where he was just sitting there in life. And so we did brought him a lot of books to read. And some got through, some didn't get through. They wouldn't let us give him Presumed Innocent. Not sure why. To Kill a Mockingbird, The Fatal Shore never got to him.
Yeah.
But we've been able to give him a lot of Charles Dickens. He likes Charles Dickens.
He spent a considerable period of time not just in isolation, but in isolation without sunlight. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes.
What does that do to a person?
It's not very healthy psychologically for them. Just that whole sort of depriving someone of the basic stimuli. And it really, when I saw him, it really was all he could focus on, was trying to get out. And we worked, and the Australian Consul was very helpful in Washington, D.C., in getting that changed and getting him out of isolation. And that's why I don't understand, now that the U.S. has put him back in isolation, why they're accepting it now when it was not tolerable a year or so ago.
How long was he in those conditions with no sunlight?
8 months.
How much contact does he have with his family and with his children?
Well, that was another thing. By him finally getting access to lawyers, we could actually try to be a conduit of getting mail and bringing it down and turning it in to be screened down there. They'll screen all his mail going in, his mail coming out. He might get a letter from his family that, the words. His little niece has blank many teeth now.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it true, as I have read, that that references to the word love have been edited out of
his
mail?
Yes.
What is the point of that?
I don't know. These are a lot of good questions for the U.S. that are running the camp. Some things you can understand why they might want to screen it. That's fine. That happens in all prison systems. But why they black it out and redact things, it's hard to know.
Terry Hicks' dad alleges that at different times David has been beaten and that he's had objects inserted in his anus. Are you aware of anything like that?
Yes.
That has happened?
Yes.
Those have happened. Do you believe that he's been subjected to torture?
I believe he's been mistreated and physically assaulted. And through my investigation, I've confirmed it. And, you know, it's interesting. It came out and became an issue with Australian government, and they, of course, only relying on the assurances by the U.S. administration. Here, I'll give you an example. And because they conducted an investigation. One of the allegations was that David was with a group of other detainees that were taken from a ship to a piece of land. They were hooded and bound at the time, and that they were randomly beaten. And so then they conducted their investigation and spoke to other detainees that were there that had been beaten as well and said, I was hit as well. But that didn't support David's story because they were hooded and they couldn't see David being beat. And you see, they can always try to find some way to support that doesn't confirm what happened. Any logical person would say, if five people go out and all five people say they were hit at this time, that supports that.
Why David Hicks?
That's a good question.
Why him? I mean, can we paint a picture here? There's 10 people in Guantanamo who have had charges placed against them. He's one of those 10. We were told that these were the worst of the worst.
Absolutely.
Why is David so valuable or so dangerous? What is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, but you mentioned the worst of the worst, and I got involved back in July of 2003 when I first was brought out from Hawaii to be assigned to him, even though they ended up not assigning me to him because the Australian government was coming out to have negotiations with the Department of Defense, and so they didn't assign me. But you know, I got the case And I kind of felt, well, wait a minute. You know, for a year or so, I'd heard all this propaganda about the worst of the worst, and I saw the file, and I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I'm getting ripped off here. How come I didn't, you know? You know, where's the worst of the worst? And, you know, I really got the shortest, not the worst of the worst, because he's very short.
And that's a problem?
No. you tower over him. But that's the question, why David Hicks? And I don't know. I mean, even if you look at all 10 that have been charged, only one of them has actually been accused of hurting anyone. And that was the 15-year-old Canadian kid. And so I did feel that, sort of, what's going on? Why David? Is it politics? Is it, you know, because he's Australian, they're trying to use him as an example, or because he's white? I don't know.
Is he the only Caucasian of those 10?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what our Prime Minister said earlier this year when asked about David Hicks.
He has, amongst those that are held in Guantanamo Bay, committed more serious offences than most. And, look, we can argue about what a serious threat to the United States means, but I would believe, and I think most people would believe, that if somebody has committed the sort of offences that they believe he's committed, then he is a threat to the United States.
True?
I don't think so. I'm not sure who's briefing him. and I guess if you qualify it with who's held at Guantanamo, because we know the Taliban spokesperson wasn't at Guantanamo. He was attending Yale University in the United States, so obviously was not in that group.
He's been released from Guantanamo.
He never got to Guantanamo.
All right.
But they let him go to university in the United States. There was the Taliban ambassador to Pakistan who was in Guantanamo who's been released. There was a fighter with Osama bin Laden who the allegations were that he was with Osama bin Laden fighting in Tora Bora, took Osama's phone so that the U.S. forces would track him so Osama could escape. He was at Guantanamo. He's free in Morocco.
That's Abdallah Tabarak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And a number of countries have sought release of the detainees.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the allegations against Mamdou Habib here in Australia were serious, more serious than the offenses against David, against the Britons. The allegations against David, I'm not sure what he's saying is serious because what's not in the charges speak a lot louder. It doesn't say David injured anyone. You know, the whole attempt at murder. And the government's theory is that, well, when David was locked up in Guantanamo in February and March of 2002, there were other people in Afghanistan firing. So therefore, he's responsible because it's a conspiracy. So he committed his crimes, so he was locked up in Gitmo. And so I'm not really sure what the prime minister is talking about by serious offenses, because the Supreme Court has already spoken and said the system was illegal and in its opinion, really criticized two of the charges against David, the conspiracy and the aiding the enemy.
You've made several visits to Australia in your capacity as David's defence counsel. Have you made an effort to see the Prime Minister, sought to see him, or the Foreign Minister?
Obviously, Dave McLeod, the foreign attorney consultant here in Australia, has met with Mr. Downer. I've met with members of the Attorney General's office.
And what kind of response have you had?
Always very pleasant. They're always more than happy to make time to speak with me. Obviously, we don't necessarily agree at the end, you know, what the choice should be, but full cooperation, especially with the Australian Federal Police, have been very helpful.
Do you understand why it is that Australians are indifferent, if not hostile, towards David Hicks?
No, I don't, because I can only look at the situation through my eyes as an American, and I know America wouldn't tolerate this. We don't allow U.S. citizens to go to the military commissions. You know, it's not permissible, because Americans have too many rights.
So no U.S. citizens.
No U.S. citizens in the military commission system. And even, you know, we had a U.S. citizen in 96 who was tried in Peru for terrorism offenses, and the government didn't rest until she was given a civilian trial. I don't understand why, and I don't really want to say that people don't care, because I think they do. I've gotten a lot of positive responses from people that no matter what, you know, they've come up to me in the airport and they say, oh, you know, what's going on, Major Morey? How you doing? What's going to happen with Hicksy? And what was he doing there? Or, you know, that sort of attitude. But they all sort of agree that he deserves to have a fair trial.
Let me put the counter-argument that would sit in some Australians' minds, that Paul Wolfowitz, when this was all set up, said this is not a legal action, this is a war. And there would be people that look at David Hicks and go, well, you know what? The terrorists didn't fight fair. He was on the wrong side of the war. He's got what's coming to him. Why should we care about David Hicks?
Well, I think that's the whole thing, is we're not saying, with David Hicks, no one's saying David actually did anything wrong or hurt anybody. Just he was on the wrong side. And that, when you say he's accused of being on the other side, so because he was on the other side, we can go ahead and take away those fundamental rights and protections that we give to our murderers and our child molesters and our rapists and to our corrupt politicians. You know, they get it. Why doesn't David Hicks rate the basic fundamental human values that we give everyone? And if he's violated the law and you try him in a fair system, fine. They don't want to give him that fair shake, unfortunately, because I think his case has become political. And the politics of it don't want to. The first military commissions can't be acquittals. They couldn't afford that.
So what you're saying is under this system, they've got to find David guilty.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of what they've invested in it.
Certainly. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Not all Australians are indifferent to this. As you know, you've met some who are passionately in support of David. I was actually sent this email today by somebody who feels passionately the other way. There you go. This is from Paul Gulvery, who said, my twin brother died in the terrorist attack in New York September 11th. I've patiently watched the Australian media sympathise with David Hicks. I would like to ask David Hicks' lawyer to verify that David actively sought and trained with a terrorist organisation, Al-Qaeda, in Pakistan. Osama bin Laden and his organisation killed 3,000 people and forever affected the lives of hundreds of families. David Hicks chose to train with Al-Qaeda. He wanted an adventure, your word earlier. Cynically, I ask, why then does David Hicks seek the help from Australia? Where are the voices of his suitors in Pakistan? That's the question.
Because he's not a Pakistani citizen. Mm. He's an Australian citizen. And so if he didn't violate Australian law, which has been very, very clear from the government, there's emotion on all sides. And that's why when you deal with a legal process, you've got to have an independent judge, an independent jury. And you don't, you know, victims can't be on the jury because there's bias. And you wouldn't want, you know, in the commission system, the prosecutors pick the judges. You know, why don't they let me pick them? Why? Because we're both on opposite sides, and we need that independent judiciary and the basic fair rights, fundamental rights. And I think when we start giving up our basic values, then the other side wins.
The British Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith, when arguing for the British detainees in Guantanamo Bay to be sent back to England, he referred to the military commissions as a legal black hole. Mm-hmm. What would it take to persuade the Australian government to change their mind?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew. I mean, the problem is, if we go back in time, you know, when they came out saying the commission system was fair, very soon after, the British government came out saying, we're not agreeing to it. Lord Goldsmith came out and said it does not meet international legal standards. The Law Council of Australia said it doesn't meet international legal standards. Every time there was a hearing, the independent observer from the Law Council came down and reported it doesn't meet international legal standards. It's not providing a fair trial. The American Bar Association was critical of it. Everybody else in the world knew it, except for Australia, who kept supporting the system. America would say it's good enough for everybody else, but not our citizens. So, and then, of course, the Supreme Court obviously said it was not good enough either. So I'm really curious to see. I would love to see the advice that the Australian government got saying, analyze the military commission system and showing how it complied with international law. I'd love to see that, if it exists.
You mentioned the US Supreme Court. Yeah. A little over a month ago, they ruled that the military commissions were in violation of US military codes and also some of the Geneva Convention. Does this bring David Hicks closer to what you would consider a fair trial?
No, not until we see what the system... there's two issues involved. Obviously, one, by ruling that the commission system was illegal, it raises the issue of, has a war crime been committed against David Hicks by him being tried in a system that did not provide a fair trial? The U.S. prosecuted many Japanese for that, and it would be a violation of Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. What is the Australian government going to do about that? Because right now, he's been a victim of a war crime far greater than he's ever done to anybody else.
Are you suggesting he has cause for action should he ever be released?
I said no, he wouldn't. I said there'd be cause of action to prosecute people that participated in the unlawful system. Mm-hmm. And that should raise concern. But no one will care because it's just David Hicks. And the illegality of it has just basically, what it's done is gotten the administration to go back and propose a new bill. And unfortunately, the bill is just a rubber stamp of the old system. And we're going to end up basically back involved in more federal court action, and more David is just going to be sitting at Guantanamo waiting for his fair trial that'll probably take some time to come about, if ever, because the current administration, probably would just be as happy to let everyone sit there for the next 2.5 years till they're out of there.
So it's possible to rubber stamp this endlessly?
Yes.
The British High Court ruled that David was eligible for a British passport. Why hasn't he taken that up?
Oh, no, he's been given his citizenship.
He was
given his citizenship, and then 5 hours later they told him we're trying to take it away.
Right, so that's going to go back to court.
Go back to court. And again, I think it's politics here too. You know, the British government doesn't want to embarrass the Australian government by doing something for David, and so they're resisting that. And we'll see what happens in the long run. Like I said, it was one little step forward and 2 steps back, and we're going to keep plugging away.
Do you feel like you're taking on the whole system sometimes?
Absolutely. I mean, that in itself was a whole new challenge here. Normally, you're operating the court-martial system. You're not worrying about the structure of the process. You're dealing with the evidence in that case, the legal issues that are raised. But here, you're dealing with challenging the entire system because it was unfair.
You're a lawyer, a marine lawyer. You normally appear...
I went to law school.
You normally appear in a court of law. Now, you don't generally appear on shows like this. In fact, I think this is the first time one of this nature.
Yes.
Is it an indication of the desperation of your position that you have to take this to the court of public opinion?
I don't know. You asked me to be on your show.
Yeah, but you said
I wasn't desperate.
You said yes. You know what I mean. You wouldn't normally be trying a case in public.
No, absolutely. And I think it was... Sorry, Andrew.
That's all right.
I can...
You're dismissed. See, I can do that with a Marine and they go.
I think they wanted us to just be good little boys and wait for the trial and make your objections so they could just go with the process. But, you know, in a rigged system, something all you can do sometimes is to just try to let people know what's going on and why it's unfair. And sometimes it takes time. And obviously in the case of David, the government and the media demonized David for so long. That nobody really worried about the system. Even now, I mean, people, they're accused of doing this and being with these people. What does it matter, what system?
This picture, which we're about to put up on the screen, is probably the main image most Australians have of David Hicks. You referred to demonisation. Do you think that's That picture has been part of that?
Well, do you have the real picture?
What's the whole picture?
The whole picture shows him and two other mates holding, and they're posing with their weapons back in Albania when he was with the KLA training. It wasn't, you know, unfortunately, it looks like he's firing a rocket launcher. They showed the whole picture. You see there's nothing in it. It's just the tube. You know, I have my pictures in my, you know, military books. I'm holding my machine gun on my waist, and, you know, everybody's got their buddy pictures.
Nonetheless, I think most Australians would look at David Hicks and feel like whatever took him on his adventure, that he was not representing the interests of this country when he was in Afghanistan.
Oh, well, I've never said that David made the best decisions in life. And I've never said that David hasn't realized that he's made some poor life choices. But I can't believe that Australians would be surprised to find an Australia popping up in any scrape around the world. I mean, you know, you run through Canberra and you see the monument to the Australians who went over and fought in the Spanish Civil War. It's, you know, that's the whole tale. Had David met, you know, some Northern Alliance guy and gone over to hang out with them, would he be the hero now?
Harder to make rational decisions in a time of war, in a time of fear.
And passion.
And passion. There would be people that look at David and say, look, however stupid he was, nonetheless, he sided with people who have expressly stated their desire to destroy our society.
See, I wouldn't agree with that. Mm-hmm. When I see David and I'm down there and I see, you know, he has more in common with the Alabama National Guardsman outside his cell than the guy locked up next to him. David doesn't hate Americans. He doesn't, you know.
Do you believe that there's any chance at all he can get a fair trial in America?
If they used the U.S. court-martial system, he'd get a fair trial. If they allowed the system to run like it should have, having the independent judiciary pick the judges and getting away from the Department of Defense General Counsel's office controlling every aspect of it.
But you've said that because this is a political thing, the chances of that are happening are very small.
It's very difficult. I mean, especially you're talking 4.5 years later, let alone. I mean, that time, you know, is this justice delayed? Is justice denied? Can you give someone a fair trial 5 years after the events? Is it even possible?
You have been far from quiet about this. I'm assuming your next posting will be somewhere to the Arctic Circle.
I hope not.
That's what everybody wants to know, that I talk to, that whenever your name comes up, they go, wow, that guy's killed his career.
I don't know. I've been a defense counsel before, and it's just not something you worry about.
You said it very clearly, this is not your normal case, not your normal circumstance. You have been very, very vocal and critical of the administration of the U.S. government and less importantly, to you, this government, amongst others.
I don't see him being very critical. I see myself as being very close to the middle, where everything is supposed to be, equality, due process. I just think the administration and the other side, in a way, has departed so far to the extreme away from our basic values that it makes it appears like I'm saying, I don't think anything I'm saying gives someone a fair trial is some novel idea or a radical idea. I hope not. You know, I'm not worried about it. There's nothing I can do except do my job the best I can and represent David and you know, have the values and the core values that the Marine Corps have taught me of justice and judgment and integrity.
Have you ever come close to resigning?
Over this case?
Mm-hmm.
No. I don't want to leave David. I mean, I don't think that would help David to leave him. You know, I see him, he's just an Australian. You know what I mean? And I'm gonna do everything I can for him just as much as if I was defending a, you know, U.S. Marine or sailor.
I know you, on your screensaver at home, you've got your two boys and you've also got a picture of David.
Yeah.
How much of this do you take home?
Well, usually more because of this case being Australia and the media calls every night that I'm, you know, I'm at home. A lot, only because, especially at the beginning, it was so much trying to learn so much. And, you know, you couldn't just do it. So it's just not a 9-to-5 job, you know, 8-to-5 job. It's constantly calling people that are all over the world and trying to grasp this. And I don't think I'd take it home any more than I would when I was a defense attorney representing a Marine or sailor. I mean, you know, you're given someone's, you know, their life is in your hand in a way, and you have a great responsibility to that. As a prosecutor, it was easy.
Yeah.
As a prosecutor, it was easy.
You don't take the injustice of it home with you?
obviously the injustice, that part of it is present that would not or has not been to the extreme in my other cases. It's not pleasant to be involved with a system that's corrupt and will always be known forever with being corrupt.
And how do you let that out, that sense of frustration? What do?
I work hard.
That's it?
Yeah. Run around after my twin boys.
Yeah. That'll release a fair bit of stress. Are your family proud of you?
Your mom's always proud of you. Right?
That is true.
Yeah.
What lies ahead for David?
I think he's going to remain at Guantanamo until there's a change, until his situation is reevaluated. There is no hope that he's going to get a fair trial next week, next month. And if the administration gets through the bill they want dealing with commissions, it will not provide him the basic protections that he deserves and that you would get at a court-martial. It's funny because the status of forces agreement between Australia and the U.S. for Australian for U.S. soldiers to commit crimes in Australia, they have to be, one of the rights is they must confront the witnesses against them. They don't want to give that to David.
If you'd have known what lay ahead in 2003 when you were chief prosecutor in Hawaii, would you have taken this brief?
I get asked that a lot, and I don't know. I think some days I say I wish I'd never done it, and other days I'm very happy to be involved, and every time I see David, that reassures me that I did the right thing by choosing to be involved.
It's refreshing to meet someone who speaks their mind so clearly.
Sorry.
Michael Dan Mori, thank you very much.
Thank you.